Overcare is when, and this is a term coined by the Heart Math Institute. For those of you who aren't familiar with that, it teaches brain and heart coherence. So it's a practice that I teach a lot of my clients for nervous system regulation, right? Through breathing, conscious breathing. So overcare is when our initial feelings of care about something or someone turn into projections, anxiety, and obsessive worry. So it escalates into emotional depletion, and there's stress load that follows. So care is one of our highest assets as human beings. But if it turns into overcare, it drains our energy, our adrenals, and that bears consequences on the subject of our care. So managing our care is supposed to actually nurture us and others, but overcare hinders that effectiveness because it drains us, even if our intentions are well-meaning.
Welcome to the Paris Hodges podcast, a space for conversations rooted in curiosity of these divinely created bodies we've been given and this human experience as a whole. This is a space where we will explore all the complexity and nuance of existing on this spinning rock, while I share story and dialogue with some individuals I consider to be great investigators of our bodies, many of which have had profound impact on my journey and understandings. I'm grateful you are here. Let's dive in. Greetings and hallucinations, friends. Welcome back to the Paris Hodges podcast. Today, I am joined by the brilliant and beautiful Martine De Luna. I had the distinct joy and pleasure of walking alongside Martine within Jillian Pothier's All for Love journey, as many of my guests who have been on this podcast so far and will continue to be on this podcast, I have met through Jillian's beautiful field. And if you aren't familiar with Martine yet, she is a 3X certified transformational coach for women, and since 2012, Martine has dedicated her life to supporting women to embrace their intrinsic feminine essence, both in their personal lives and in their relationship with men, as well as their children. Through a unique combination of feminine practices alongside insights into female biology and psychology, Martine guides her clients to fully embody their femininity across all aspects of life. In our conversation, Martine takes us on a journey from her roots in fundamentalism to discovering a life filled with love and devotion. She shares her transformative experience of shifting from a fear-based relationship with God to one of heartfelt connection and surrender. Exploring the liberation from fear-based paradigms, Martine vividly recounts how marriage and the birth of her son were pivotal moments that led to her experiencing life's profound beauty, akin to entering the Garden of Eden. Throughout the episode, we delve into the essence of creation and partnership with God and the importance of seizing the day to remain present with family and the inherent design of human beings. Martine also addresses critical topics such as the concept of overcare and overfunctioning, highlighting their impact on adrenal health and the practice of allowing our sons to contribute and gift back. We also mention and quote our mentor, Jillian Pothier, multiple times throughout this conversation. And Jillian's All for Love journey is open for registration right now until they begin on February 29th. And if you have the opportunity to partake in something such as Jillian's All for Love journey, I strongly encourage you to do so. And that will also be linked down in the show notes. I so look forward to hearing how this is received and just really grateful. All right, let's dive in.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Martine. I would love if you would just introduce yourself and what it is, how it is that you exist in this world.
Oh, gosh. I exist by the grace of God, the goodness of God. Right? But I am a wife, a mother of two. I have a teenage son and a daughter. And I also function like in this world as a women's coach, which I've been doing for the last 13 years. So just soon after I became a mother, I went into coaching unofficially at first. It was more of like a bunch of women who were reading my then blog about being a work-at-home mom, coming and asking for support and just to listen and advise them. And I thought it was so interesting that that could happen from here where I am with women from any part of the world. So I would say that's been the cadence of my life, and like the triangle of my life the past 13 years. But today I really have a great love for my mentorship with women in regards to respecting like the masculine in men, not just men, but their fathers, brothers, and their sons, you know. And this became even more real to me when I had my own son. So that's how I function. That's how God, I believe, is using me for now. And it may change as things go, usually in my world, right? But yeah, it's a very, I feel very, very content and light around just thinking about that, how I function and how I am being used currently by him.
So beautiful. And I guess I should also name, which will likely be stated in the introduction too, is that we've come to meet and like journey alongside one another in different feminine teaching spaces. Specifically Jillian Pothier's All for Love journey, in which I got to really learn who you are more, not just like the spaces where we are, you know, touch up against each other too in the internet world, because for me, it's been such an important part of my journey as the mother of a son to seek out I've been so generously the Father has placed women like you in my path that I can
likewise
can come alongside and learn from. And it's something that I'm so grateful for that we get to experience by way of the internet, especially during a time when some of this conversation can be diluted or lost, or we might not have had, or it might not even be that we didn't have it, but we aren't yet able to witness it or experience it in our own world yet. Mm. And so like, it's so beautiful that we have this opportunity to experience such things in the internet world and to have teaching spaces where we can really like learn. And I've always been so drawn to you, Martine, from the way that you have that very Christed relationship as well. And the way that you bring that into teachings, because it's really helped impact, you know, my own personal journey as also.
Yeah. And I believe I mentioned that even that has had its own refining and purification throughout the years, especially growing up, you know, in a very, like, in my language, like fundamentalist, rather restrictive or constricting type of expression of relationship with God, which has, you know, healed through learning how to relate with men and the masculine, which was really one of the gifts that I received through Jillian Pothier's work in particular, because it's been a journey for me to relate with the masculine from a place of love and devotion versus fear and contortion, which is, you know, like if you grew up in the way that I was raised, not by my parents, really. My parents were a most loving and gracious couple. I have a very like positive like lens of mother and father from them, but it was really the overarching matrix that I was living inside of, which was fearing God versus melting into God and living within the grace of God that he had given. So that informs a huge part of also how more of like the topside world teachings on relating with men and boys, it's really understanding like the nature of God and how that healed throughout the years, that also distilled into the teaching of like relating with men, with sons, with brothers, even with colleagues, and, you know, the world of men who are our other, our opposite in position of in this world. A lot of it was really healed through like receiving a new, I don't even know how to say it, a new knowing of God and it landing in my body and no longer just having head knowledge about God, which is kind of the world that I lived in for decades. And so it was never really planted and rooted into my physical body, which is really the gift of the work around the feminine and embodiment and the soma, which, you know, has itself been a journey for me throughout the years.
Ooh, yeah, so much there. I'm curious if you could expand a bit on too of like what it was like before, you know, you really stepped into the embodiment path. Like what did relating to God or what did relating to your father or brother really like look like for you? Like what were the characteristics that you were oriented towards? Just to break down a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, my family was always your, the word now is like traditional family, nuclear family. So my entire lineage from my grandfathers and grandmothers down to my parents, it was always like dad goes to work, mom stays at home, and mom is really like the nurturer of the home. So we had that, like we had a very, well-rounded, like the language now is gender role specific model of relating to our mother and our father. And with that came how to treat women. So even if I'm the eldest daughter, my brothers treat me with profound respect, and it was embedded into them at a young age. So my brothers were the first ones who would open doors for me, you know, would get the chair for me, would carry things for me. That was really a modeling that my father passed on to my brothers. And my mother, you know, would also teach me, like in the domestic arts, you know, how to be a woman, how to be gracious. So it was all like very normative for me. It wasn't something that I had to learn. It was just an embodiment of all of that growing up. And then another layer of that was also church, like life in church. Since the age of nine, my mother in particular had become very active, like in church ministry life. So we grew up, I should also mention, we didn't grow up in my home country. We grew up traveling around Asia because my dad was an expatriate. He was a stockbroker and a banker. So that kind of work brings you all sorts of places. Anyway, so we also experienced being not just this traditional family, but this family that would plant communities of Christians all over the place, depending on which country we were living in at the time. So I remember for a huge chunk of my life, we were also every Sunday, like in church, serving in ministry. At one point, I even started to serve in like the staff or like the ministry inside of the churches, the church communities that we'd put up, right? And that's where I got my first kind of like exposure to more of like the rigidity of religion, which I couldn't as a child parse. I did not have the specific tools and skills to parse through anything except this is right and this is wrong. So I also had that growing up. And, you know, when you're a child, you simply just trust your parents, you know, that they know what they're doing, they know what life is about, and you basically absorb that in your little frame of awareness, right? And so I grew up unconsciously with a lot of fear just around making mistakes, around God, not necessarily my parents, right? But this God who, you know, if I just misstep a little bit, I could end up like in burning fires in hell. So I had that paradigm or experience that I lived inside of growing up for a while. And it really informed also how I saw myself as a woman, as a person. And I believe it was around 18, 19, around that age, where I started to have questions. I'm like, is living in fear of what God can do to me really true? And that's when I started parsing through religion and spirituality and church history and the history of the world. Like, it started my sorting journey in the psyche, essentially. And that continues on to this day. Like, I feel that what I help women with now in particular is to sort through and identify the ideas and the perceptions that inform what they are birthing as an experience in their lives, right? Because that was me for a long time. I was unconsciously birthing experiences of fear and dogma. And I felt like I couldn't move freely in the world without, oh my gosh, one day I make a mistake and I end up in hell for all eternity, right? So I did not know a loving relationship with God. And again, this was not because of what my parents were doing. This was not because of that we didn't have a loving, like traditional family relationship. It was really the worldview that I had that had me living in a lot of fear. So just to close that chapter, to answer the question of before, it was around 2010 when I really released the fear that if I stepped out of this reference point of God, that I would be doomed. And I literally, what that literally looked like was, well, leaving the church community that I had been a part of with my parents for since I was a child, and starting on like a journey to God and with God outside of your traditional like religious structure in terms of being a Christian. And I'm still on that path. Like I still have a relationship with Christ. Like for me, that informs also my way of being in this world. I feel like Jesus for me embodied like what we all get to embody in terms of relationship with God. And so that is why I love him in particular. But it has been such a deep journey the last 14 years, which is also the span of years I've been a mother to my own child, that we really have been given by God the gift of creating the experience we live inside of. Some people call that free will, right? But really, it's attuning and becoming congruent again with God's purpose and design. And there's a specific design over and above that for men and women, like it says in Genesis 1:27, male and female, he created them. So a lot of my journey in the after of what it was like before has been a fascination with male and female distinction, with masculine and feminine, to use more familiar language, right? And to see how these dimensions are actually layered into each other. They interplay with each other. Hence, stepping or landing into fields like Jillian, who is a masterful assimilator of all of this, right? And I find that I'm drawn to women who are assimilators of the nuances and the layers of the multidimensional nature of the masculine and feminine, which is kind of like where my work is now. And then and specifically my work in the top side effects of things is relationship dynamics between men and women, specifically in family dynamics in marriages. So
so good, Martine. There's I have a feeling we'll circle back to lots of parts in there, especially that you brought up Genesis, and the book of Genesis is my favorite.
I love it. Me
for discussing masculine and feminine energetics around like the origin point, in my opinion, of the wound of betrayal and rejection that gets played out over and over again. And I've watched this happen even in my own life with different men in courtship, like periods of time where I'm like, oh my goodness, this is Adam and Eve. And this is Adam talking to God, going like, God, it was the woman you gave me.
it's always who's blaming who.
Yeah. And then what that looks like to the ability to turn towards in covenant and relationship. And you touched on that part a couple of different times around, you know, the difference between, I'm going to name it as almost like the legalistic theology of existing in the world, as opposed to the like practical application and intimacy, like true intimacy between one and God, and thus the ability to be in true intimacy with man, like mortal man, as well as like humanity, and what that really unfolds into to the true resonance of love that allows us to completely transmute any type of thing that, you know, what one would label as possible sin, right?
Yes.
And so part, I love that you named some of where you got guided into and the responsibility that you, like the differentiation point too, where you said like, it was your perspective of what was happening around you, right? Like, and that I really think that that's part of like the beautiful gift that God gives us all, to go on that journey of like, you need to be able to have the embodied experience of this. So let me take you by the hand and walk you through this. Only because I'm not too familiar. In 2010, was that, was how long before that were you married? Or like, what was it about that particular time point that really opened you up to beginning to like, you know, start to like clean the mirror of perception?
Right. Yeah. So 2010 was 2 years after my my wedding, like my marriage with my husband. And I had just, at that point, my son had just turned a year old. And so the turning point, and this is where I believe that at as early as that, God had already shaped my paradigm to understand the essence of the feminine. When I talk of the feminine here, like more of like the Jungian model of what that is, it was like, this is a creational moment for you. Nothing's ending here. Maybe something's ending in the topside expression of things, that you're leaving a certain community, a certain place that is not like it's no longer resonating with you, but it's just not the environment for raising the family that you are now birthing. Because this is my first child, I was newlywed, and we were really co-creating a family together, my husband and I. So the decision to explant, that's the term when you leave a community, like a religious community, was really a replanting into a new, I always reference it like a new Eden for my clients. Like when you're a couple and when you are growing an entirely new ecosystem within God, it's like a new Garden of Eden. And there's a masculine and a feminine, a male, female expression of it, and their children, their offspring. So that for me has always been like the model of what is created when we explant out of a paradigm that is no longer the one that God leads us into exist in. And he leads us into creating and co-creating this new paradigm. And these words might sound very strange to people at first. It's like, what? It's like you're leaving one planet and you're like moving to another one. That's actually a really good analogy of it, right? Because we're all within like the same, we can't escape God. It says in Psalms that even if we try to escape to the darkest crevices of the earth, he is there. So this is not about escaping God. This is about understanding that it's in our nature to create. It's in our nature to create within God. Like we will never outrun, outcreate God. And so for us as a family unit, it was really deciding, okay, what were some of the things that we didn't question before? Not that we're making ourselves a victim here, but it's just interesting that that no longer is serving the type of Eden we are cultivating, creating as a family, like as mother, father, baby at the time, right? And so I can say that it was a brave decision, because it's like, how do you know life outside of what you've always lived inside of, right? That frame of reference. And for me, that was really, that was the first time I actually felt in my body. Because if you or any of your listeners grew up inside of a very fundamentalist type of religious expression, that fundamental view, that's why it's called fundamentalism, shapes your entire world. Like it is your existence. Even the people that you associate with are within communities that have that frame of existence. And so to leave that literally feels like you're what it would be if you were leaving to go to live in another planet. At least that's how I reference it. But what that looked like was, when we step out of that place, thunder didn't come down from the heavens. The earth didn't come and swallow me whole, right? We actually had a very healthy family dynamic and still do, but it wasn't encased or kind of like encowled in fear of doing something wrong, or doing something like impure, right? Because we were literally the model of that Edenic model, you know, mother and father and a baby. We were just creating outside of a limited experience that we had lived inside of. And now there was more opportunity to really expand and grow in the gnosis of who God is, and not just one lineage's expression of it. And I know a lot of people sound like, oh, you mean you just pick and choose like what you feel? There was a time that I did that, and that was not also a stable, or it wasn't a structure within that I also could find peace in. It was really when I had a reference point like Christ, who was both human and God, that, and I'm just going to use the language, made sense, that things made sense. There was both a concreteness and a firmness to the way of living that we were living, and at the same time, a mystical, intangible, purely like faith-based aspect to it, so that I wouldn't feel like it was all on me, right? That is how I would describe in words what the journey has been like up to this point, because I'm always like, we're never like really getting anywhere when it comes to like relationship with God, even as a family, or even like who we are as a family. We go to that cliche of carpe diem, right? Like, we're just seizing today. We're living and animating these bodies and creation for today. And there's a psalm that says that it is the word that is a lamp to our feet and a light to our path. And people can take that very differently depending on the paradigm that you're in. If I was in fundamentalism, that would have meant, oh, the Bible, just the Bible, right? That's the word. But now it's like the word is truth. The word is, you know, and truth is out there. Like, it's staring me through this tree, this glorious Indian tree that's staring at me right now while I'm talking to you in my garden. That's truth, right? So there's a more like, gosh, I describe this as a more feminine expression than I've ever known ever in my life, because God lets me discover him through what is observable, like what I can see, smell, taste, and touch in creation, and possibilities, things that I can envision, dream, even fantasize, right? Because even that capacity, that creational capacity, is from him and how we are designed as humans. So as you can see, I've sunk into my realm of just so being good. Fascinated by the human beings that we are. I don't know if that answers the question in its completeness, but
well, I think some of these things are like, they're just so open-ended. And I hear in what you're saying too, how much it is like you came to that pivot point of existing in this world. Like, have you ever seen that movie Pleasantville? It's like you were in this black and white, legalistic, wrong, right. I can't leave. I can't leave. If I leave, then it's going to burn all of this down.
That was my world before.
Yeah, to then totally shifting into that full spectrum, right? It's like then suddenly the color came on and you saw the full spectrum of God in everything, rather than this whole, like you've touched on this and named this a couple of times before, around the, rather than it being like, if I sin, then I will go to hell. It becomes this like, how can I experience God and love in all things around me, including the tree and in the rain and in the like the things, the quote unquote toxic load that is really just part of the path, right? Like the Judas played a role. And without Judas,
he did.
There's no resurrection. And we think about that time of like in many of our lives when somebody played Judas and like in our life to help create a new system and a new way of existing. And so I love what you're saying, because in the world of recovery that I exist in, we have this saying that more will be revealed. And that's what I hear that you really stepped into. And I love that it was like after becoming a wife, and then more importantly, after becoming a mother. And there's something so potent, and only because this is my frame of reference as a mother of a son, is like, it feels like, because doesn't he birth her? Right?
Yes, exactly. So you aren't actually ever complete as a mother until your son changes you. Right? Like his beingness penetrates you. Exactly. Oh yeah, let's talk about that. Like, how old's your son now?
Oh,
how old is Grayson?
He will be 11 in April. And let me tell you, Martine, it was like there is a moment. The moment that child was born. And just to explain too, because I don't think I've ever talked about this out loud, or at least in recording places, prior to getting pregnant, anytime I held a baby would cry. And so when I would date men and stuff, and I was like, I just had that mother, that hunger to be a mother since I was like a little girl. I mean,
Yes.
I was searching for my husband from preschool. Like I just had that innate knowing. It's amazing how seated in us it really is. And I would date men and they'd be like, how can you be a mom? Babies cry anytime you pick them up. And which tells you a lot about my nervous system state during that time period.
Yeah.
But there is, I mean, I can look back now and see the ways in which I experienced that Grayson's soul was calling me from the time that even I was like really, really young, that I knew that he was guiding my path. And then the moment that he was born, Martine, I just so vividly remember looking in his eyes. And it was as though, like, I call it the chiropractic adjustment of, you know, like, it was like, I had this whole chiropractic adjustment of my entire world. And there was just like, I remember looking at him and going like, oh my goodness, I remember you.
Oh, I know what you mean.
Right? It's like that whole like, oh my goodness. And my world was never the same. And it was just like that. I mean, there's a lot of people who have known my path too, like from being bulimic and like just all of the other addictive behavior sets that kind of came out sideways in my life. But that child saved me in so many different ways because of the woman he's like called me to become to help mother him.
That's so, so true. It's that is... I love that because you talked about like the moment that you saw him at birth. For me, my son in the earliest, I think it's because also of my nervous system at the time. Like, I remember the first time he had like a febrile seizure. I don't know if you've experienced that, but when, you know, they get really feverish and they convulse, I was like a hot mess, right? Like, I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what to do. And it created a, so we talk about German new medicine a little bit, right? But it was kind of like my first real remembered conflict shock. And it created, at least, you know, from what I can track, right? So it created like a paradigm of anxiety over this child, to the point where, you know, for the first 10 years of his life, I was, I mean, I am a mother, but I was mothering, you know, like overcare, we call it in the Heart Math Institute, right? When it's overcare, it's overfunctioning, right? You are overfunctioning in some way. And of course, I did not see that, because the narratives that we live inside of, especially coming from a very gynocentric societal reference point of motherhood and parenting, you know, like the whole gentle parenting movement and whatnot. I overcared this boy to the point where I delayed some essential nutrients that he needed to be masculine, right?
Can I pause
you know what
you
I
really
mean?
Quick, Martin?
Yeah, sure.
Just because I think I'm so glad that this unfolded to this place.
Uh-huh.
Can you describe for anybody listening who may not be familiar as to what overcare really looks like in being a mother, especially a mother to a son? Because I think that this becomes like the parsing through point that I feel like is, at least in my frame of world, that a lot of women are starting to become aware of like how to, because Camille named, like within All for Love, which I loved so much.
Oh, I love Camille.
Mothering is like actually the most sacred thing, and it's coddling that we do. That is the toxic mimic of nurturing.
Bring in some one taste in there. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I love that you asked that question. Yeah. Care is a very organic, biological function of in biology, which is how I teach masculine and feminine dynamics. Care is basically when the bigger entity is over the smaller entity, and there's a reflexive mechanism of nurturing them because they're smaller, because they're weaker, more vulnerable. So care is what the stronger biological being directs to the more vulnerable biological being. That's the definition of what care is. Overcare is when, and this is a term coined by the Heart Math Institute. For those of you who aren't familiar with that, it teaches brain and heart coherence. So it's a practice that I teach a lot of my clients for nervous system regulation, right? Through breathing, conscious breathing. So overcare is when our initial feelings of care about something or someone turn into projections, anxiety, and obsessive worry. So it escalates into emotional depletion, and there's stress load that follows. So care is one of our highest assets as human beings. But if it turns into overcare, it drains our energy, our adrenals, and that bears consequences on the subject of our care. So managing our care is supposed to actually nurture us and others, but overcare hinders that effectiveness because it drains us, even if our intentions are well-meaning. So a symptom of overcare is, okay, I have a son, let's use sons as the reference point, but that son has essential skills, and it's a skill, masculinity is a skill, that he has to develop through me not caring so much, if we can use that language, because if he doesn't, I have overcared him. He's not going to be able to manage the executive functioning that has to happen for him to learn, let's say, how to recover from a boo-boo or a wound that he gets in the park, or an injury that he sustains because he was playing rough. He won't be able to metabolize that in his little body if he has a reference point of mother over caring for him. So phrases like, be careful, like if they hear that all the time in the playground, they're not going to move because they'll be like, okay, there's something wrong with me being that excited or being that physical or being that risky or daring. So the practice of identifying overcare and eliminating it from our behavior is actually a product of nervous system regulation for the mother, proper association of the male. So in to borrow an all for love piece of languaging, approval of maleness, right? Respect for maleness. And it also means for us taking personal responsibility of our relationship with sensation, because that's really what we are avoiding in overcare. I don't want to hold the sensation of me looking at my son, you know, like my son does karate, me looking at my son being hit by bigger men on his stomach because it's part of like pain tolerance training in martial arts. Like, most women are like, I don't want to deal with that sensation. But the thing is, if we're going to go into overfunctioning, that's what we do. We do not want to have a relationship with sensation. We want to avoid it. Whereas if we care properly and then trust that this male being has the capability to become stronger and stronger and stronger and apply his will to what is happening to him. And then reflexively, I get to create the capaciousness for this sensation instead of avoiding it. Like, oh no, I'm not going to look. I'm not going to be there. But like, there's something nourishingly re-templatizing when we can see our boys live through pain instead of taking it away from them through overcare. So, and that is something I too like have learned, you know, through the years. I said he was around 10 when I had this awakening, right? And I said, oh my gosh, like I have to ask his forgiveness for overcaring so much and believing that that was being a good mom, right? But at the same time, also reconciling with myself that I was just doing all that I knew to do because that was the experience I was living inside of. So this whole journey of the feminine, also like self-forgiveness, and not also Jillian's word is oversaturating in like the swamp of the, you know, that swampiness of the feminine. Like, okay, there's a time for knowing that I removed something from the experience of my son, but it was unconscious. There's a time for living inside of the remorse of that, but there is also a time for resurrection and saying, okay, this resets my entire relationship with the masculine in my son, and I am in approval of that. And I find that living inside of that type of perception has healed my relationship with my son, even without his conscious awareness that that was happening. So now, like, when I see that he has an opportunity to step in, I don't step in. I let him figure things out instead of teaching him, hey, you should figure this out. Just feeling into his own energetics of how he is experiencing himself as a young man in the world, and not trying to manipulate or contort so that he will do something masculine. That's really kind of like where I am personally right now in terms of my relationship with him. And funnily enough, that's something my husband was trying to teach me for a long time. You know, when the men are like, just let him get hurt. Let him suffer a little bit. And we're like, why, when I can take care of him? Right? So yeah, overcare has been a huge death, ego death for me personally. And I think it is for a lot of women too, because that's the death of our overfunctioning as well. And the meeting of our deep desire for the masculine, because I think we forget that desire isn't always just in the romantic relationships. It is also like in the maternal relationship as well. Like seeing the masculine rise in our son is part of our deepest desire too.
Yeah.
We just don't know it. Yeah.
And to kind of bring this back to the thing that I've learned from mothering Grayson is how much you can end up unconsciously injecting your will onto him when we are oriented to that very legalistic wrong and right, right? That cuts off the circuitry of life where we're like, oh no, I don't want him to do that. I don't want him to experience that. And what we end up doing is we play God. We try and be their God. And that's the whole overfunctioning of like not asking for help. Like Grayson and I are in a season of, and this is, it would clearly be very different if I had a male, like a partner to help, you know, to like, you know, orient this, our internal family system in a different way. However, that's not yet the reality. And so we just coexist as though he exists here. And and so we've been building out, like now that we are in a new apartment, Grayson and I have been navigating like the structuring of how to do things. And, you know, part of it is like, having him cook more and like walking through the process of like teaching him how to clean things. And then also providing feedback that doesn't castrate him.
Yes.
And to talk through, like, just as an example too, like, I mean, we went through a really crazy year last year. I mean,
I know.
God walked us through a really big time. But, you know, what was really beautiful was watching mine and his relationship unfold, because I could watch the differentiation process beginning to happen between he and I. And this is, I think, where a lot of women will start to like claw and latch, but they start to see that umbilical cord, the very invisible umbilical cord between mother and child, start to like become further and further apart. And so I could watch like me not being present, like in the car or different places with him. And so I started to open up the space to allow him to contribute. And so one of the very small things that I did was I started to ask him to navigate, to use the GPS to direct us places. And then, like, you know, he and I started communicating about, because obviously he didn't yet know how to read the GPS to me in a way that I wanted the GPS to be read. And so there was like a whole little dynamic and dance, and really like walking through, you know, not trying to over caretake for his feelings of the experience of receiving feedback. And like, you know, we just had this whole little dance about it, but like starting to see the places that I was over functioning, right? Like driving in the car, trying to think of the millions of things that I thought that I needed to be thinking about, rather than going like, hey, can you help me? Can you help contribute to this journey that we're taking together?
Yes. Yes. And the thing is, like, and this is something that I learned also like from men. I think Ryan King, with the Wisdom of Kings, he came into one of my Zoom calls for the women that I hold space for. And he said, we're just waiting for you to ask us to like help. And it was said so frankly in such a male, like matter-of-factly tone. And then when I started to learn about like the biological like nature of men, it's they have to be put to work. They have to be made to work, or else they do not feel good. So Dr. Pat Allen in her book, Getting to I Do, says that men have to do good in order to feel good, but not just men. I mean, boys are little men, right? And so when we castrate them was your word, right? I love that. When we castrate them from the opportunity to apply their masculine instinct outward, we are overcaring. And that means we are overfunctioning as the woman, right? Because we are not allowing ourselves to receive from him. Mm-hmm. And I love that you mentioned that you and Grayson cook, because Vito and I cook as well. Like, he loves the weekly cooking lessons that he has, which, by the way, he takes like by himself, and I'm just there kind of like his sous chef kind of thing. I'm just like on the side, but like it's so fulfilling for them to create something and then serve it to the family. Oh, right? In a way that like a provider man like serves. He's like, here's the bacon that I'm bringing home, and it is for you. I remember like my grandfather, he would tell me everything that I make. He was a lawyer. Everything that I make, I give to your grandmother because I trust that she can make something good with it. And he was talking mm-hmm. about like in the 1950s, how the man would give the wife the salary, you know, and most women were housewives back then. And then she would be in charge of resourcing from whatever he brought home. I felt like that the same energetic every time I allow my son to give to me, right? And from that, I can resource, whether it's a favor that he, it's not really a favor, it is a gift that he renders for me. Right. Mm. I'm trying to unlanguage the fact that, okay, do it as a favor. It's more like a gift. It's not a contortion for him to carry things for me or lift or do hard things, because he is 14 years old, right? He is fully capable of applying his willful strength and purpose to something. And I feel that the younger we allow them to initiate themselves, the more we, to use a polarity term, lean back, which is true in this case, then the more we are actually met in our desire in meeting the masculine through our sons.
Oh, I love that you named resource, Martine, because that is like the re-templatization towards source, that they come yes. in deeper relationship. And one of the things, I don't know if you've experienced this, but the thing that I've needed to unwind in my process, to meet that place of self-forgiveness is to uncouple from the way in which pop psychology can take the very human and very natural ways of being and overlay it to this shame and guilt programming and refer to it as like,
Pertoffication. Okay.
Yeah. Like where like a child would be like over parentified, right?
Yes.
And this is where I think like, I love your, perspective and lens that you've been gifted through your journey to really understand biology, right? Like if we look at nature, we can learn the nature of God. Like, yes. you know, animals, nature doesn't care. They just exist.
Yeah, nature is perfect. Yeah.
And so we can watch what that looks like you're talking about around if we lean back at a younger and younger age with them in a safe, non-neglectful manner.
Yes.
We can exactly. watch them be able to have an exalted orientation to source, to God, and to watch the masculine consciousness really come online, because I witnessed this in Grayson from a very young age in the way that he would want to create experiences like with me or for me, and allowing him the space to gift that. And like,
yes.
and you know, and so this is, I just love, I so am so grateful I get to exist in the world with you, Martine.
Yes, yes. I love that what you said, that the last thing you said, it allows him to gift us. It's not we allow him to gift us. Like there's such a there's such a thin line between those two things, because the nature of the feminine, like if we're going to associate. And this is why I believe, you know, there's a helpfulness to looking at how different lineages regard the feminine, like in Eastern lineages, for instance, which is my lineage. I come from a Southeast Asian lineage in terms of racially. We believe that the feminine is the destructive force, right? Mm. It's she, and that's why, you know, in India you have the Kali, mm-hmm. right, which is the death process. So when we die to our, and this is, you know, an all for love type of thread here, when we experience like the egoic death of our preferences, as Gillian Pothier says, right? That is really on the topside world, the leaning back of the tendency to overcare and therefore overfunction, right? Inside of our nervous system. It's really that point that we experience resurrection. And I talk about resurrection yes. a lot in my work because it's a reference point that is so ingrained in my system, not just in my system mentally, but also in my nervous system, in my body as a woman, mm-hmm. and as biological women. We live this every month. Life, death of the womb, right? Every choice point is a resurrection. Like mm-hmm. that is something that God specifically through Christ modeled as a reference point for humanity, right?
Yes.
I mean, like, for me, if I did not allow my son to experience the hardships that he has rightfully experienced, you know, through pain tolerance training in martial arts, now he has hired himself with his own money, a private tutor, you know, for math.
Oh, I
think,
love this.
Right. And then he through with his money, like he ran like a business last December selling baked goods that he made. Right. And he made a lot of money from that. And he's like, I think I'm going to save some of this. And then I'm going to use some of it to hire myself a private tutor. I mean, like, hello. So all of these opportunities for him to apply his will, because there's a purpose that he sees that I don't see, which again, if you understand the biological nature of men, it is what they do that makes them. Then that means for us, it is what we do not do that opens up the gates for the death of our preferences, which is important because there has to be a death in order for resurrection, in order for new life, for transfiguration, mm. right? So that is why each time we allow ourselves to die to our preference, I would prefer not to hold the sensation of any discomfort that could happen if he gets injured on the football field, something like that. I die to that. And I say, like, I trust and believe in the strength and will of my son, right? That resets the relationship each time, mm. right? It's the same kind of languaging I use when I help a woman through infidelity, you know, like mm. there's an infidelity in her relationship and then she chooses to stay because she believes, okay, what was my part in like this? If there was, right? Because actually there always is, you know, polarity, right? But like, it's the same. It's like, okay, the relationship at that point is reset, right? It is no longer the previous iteration of the union. It is a new one. That is resurrection. When it comes to our boys, each moment of the leaning back, each opportunity of the egoic death of preferences, each time we create capaciousness, and we need God for that. We need like God, I need you to fill me so that I am not filling myself with my own reflexive, unconscious, like reflex responses and defaults and distrust, and not allowing my son to flourish and awaken into his masculine instinct. I am dying to that. Mm-hmm. Each time I do that, the relationship is reset and it is rebirthed, which is what resurrection is. It's why we have Easter eggs and bunnies as visual references for that time. You know, it is a rebirth. Resurrection is a rebirth. And I feel that as mothers, each day that we spend with our sons and we feel those little deaths, it's ironic that little death is the same word for orgasm, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because it really is, you know, it really is our pleasure to do that, to experience that. We just don't know it here, because oftentimes we just stay here to try and make sense of it all. Whereas if we drop in to the womb and to the body and to just out of the structural all the time, that is when we can perceive our sons with new sight. And it goes to what Sasha Tessick, a wonderful male teacher on biological relationships, says. That is when you see him as a man. And that's the only thing a woman can give. He's like, the only thing a woman can give to a man is that she sees him as a man. That's it. And it starts when they're boys.
So good, Martine. I'm so glad that you named that whole, like, I mean, that is the, like, taking up your cross daily, right? Like,
it
the dying
is.
Unto yourself, the handing your will and your life over to the care of God, but then also handing, you know, your son's life and will over to the care of God and trusting that he's on his own individual journey and, like, not trying to, like, mess with that.
Oh, yeah,
so good,
so beautiful. Gosh, I think we could talk for another episode.
Well, I look forward to having you on again.
Me too,
Martine. How can people get in contact with you? Do you have any upcoming offerings for individuals to partake in?
Yes. Well, I actually have my membership. It's a femininity community called Feminine and Free. And that's where I recommend, like, women begin. So you can go to my Instagram bio. It's all there. It's a monthly membership. So you can join for, I think it's at least 4 months. And then that's just a little bit of time for anyone to be able to marinate in, like the container that is. And then I also have one-on-one work as well, if women are open to, like, a deeper holding of space and care. So yeah, you can find it all at Feminine Womanhood on Instagram. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Martine, for being here and for sharing your wisdom and embodied experience of being a woman on this planet.
Thank you for having me, Paris. It was such a pleasure.
And there you have it, friends. If you would like to get in contact with Martine or to be supported by her, all of her information can be found down in the show notes, as well as the link for Jillian Pothier's All for Love journey. Until next time, be blessed, be well, and may you experience the miraculous in all things.